Welcome to the Phoenix Helix Podcast, dedicated to maximizing autoimmune health through the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol and functional medicine. While there is no cure for autoimmune disease, the choices we make every day can have a powerful impact on how we feel. I'm Eileen Laird, your host from PhoenixHelix.com, and I reduced my rheumatoid arthritis pain by 95%, which took me from a life of excruciating pain and disability back to a full and beautiful life. A short disclaimer, I'm neither a doctor nor a nutritionist, and the opinions expressed here are personal. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions. Now let's get on to the show. Welcome to episode 166. Our topic today is Autoimmunity 101. Most people listening to this podcast have autoimmune disease, but it can be confusing to understand exactly what is happening within our bodies. So today we're going to do a deep dive into the immune system. How is it supposed to work and what changes with autoimmune disease? My guest is Dr. Douglas Pucci, a functional medicine doctor with over 30 years clinical experience. He has a gift for describing medical information in a way that's easy to understand. I am excited to have this conversation with him today. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Pucci.
Thank you so much, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really looking forward to our discussion today.
Oh, me too. Before we dive into our interview, though, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, and I'm welcoming a new sponsor today, Paloma Thyroid Health. So first, I want to mention that this podcast is airing in January, and January is Thyroid Awareness Month. And as many of you know, hypothyroidism has become an epidemic, with Hashimoto's thyroiditis one of the most common autoimmune diseases. Paloma Health is a telemedicine practice that offers complete care for hypothyroidism, empowering patients to reclaim their health. So when it comes to testing your thyroid, most doctors simply measure TSH and call it a day, and this often leads to the statement, your labs are normal, which so many of you have heard, and then you're sent home with no treatment offered. But a complete thyroid panel is necessary to accurately measure and treat hypothyroidism. Paloma Health offers easy at-home thyroid tests, which measure TSH, free T3, free T4, and TPO antibodies, and you also have the option to add on reverse T3 and vitamin D testing as well. So the kit is available in all states within the United States except New York, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, not because Paloma Health is trying to exclude you listeners who live there, but state regulations don't allow this type of at-home testing. But I also want to mention that they're not just a testing company. Their goal is to offer complete medical care, and that means consultations with physicians who are thyroid specialists. So these doctors can prescribe thyroid medication, but they also understand the role diet, lifestyle, and supplements play in thyroid health. Paloma has a truly holistic approach. So they currently have doctors available in 13 states, and that list is growing all the time. Their goal is to expand to all 50 states if possible. And then Paloma also has some services available to anyone worldwide, and that's their virtual nutritional counseling, and they also have a free mobile app to guide you through the AIP diet and lifestyle, which also happens to be a great symptom tracker. So for more information on everything they have to offer, please visit their website. It's palomahealth.com, P-A-L-O-M-A health, all one word, .com. And you can save $30 off your first thyroid test with the code PHOENIX, P-H-O-E-N-I-X. So as always, I will also include links in the show notes. Okay, let's dive into this interview. Well, Dr. Pucci, before we dive into today's topic, I'd love our listeners to learn a little bit more about you. So what inspired you to become a functional medicine practitioner?
Yeah, that's always a great question, right? As you mentioned already that I'm in practice 30 years, so I can tell you that I did not get here overnight. It's been a process. I came out of college with a pre-med background. But after I graduated, I decided that I wanted to get out into the business world for a while. And I did that for 2 years, and I quickly realized that the corporate world was not for me, that I definitely wanted to get back into the health field and be of service to people that way. But I learned about chiropractic and I got really excited about the philosophy of chiropractic. I went to chiropractic school. The philosophy of chiropractic, you know, stands in the morals that it is a holistic approach, that we look at the body with a innate ability to heal if we can just, you know, remove interferences. And I loved it. But of course, when you get into the real world, and you're going to deal with insurance companies, you know, they tell you that you're going to be a back pain doctor. And I was a really good adjustment, a good chiropractor. But over the years, I was getting a little frustrated and questioning, like, why was it that there was, you know, people that I was able to help and chiropractic was working really well. And for other patients, it just wasn't. And of course, it was like, if anybody's been to a chiropractor, you know, you go 2-3 times a week. And I always ask the question is like, why would I adjust someone that did pretty well and they would come back in 2-3 days? And I had to adjust the same segment over and over again. Why were they not holding the adjustments? Also, at that time, my dad had to go in for bypass heart surgery. I remember going down to the hospital with my mom and my dad to meet with the surgeon to review what the process was going to be and the expectations. And we were sitting in this huge rotundrum of this hospital. And of course, my dad and my mom were very nervous, but I was walking around and I'm reading all the brochures. And it was my amazement that the brochures were talking about how excited and how proud the hospital was to have built this multi-million dollar wing to meet the demands of the community. And I just was like flabbergasted. In the medical model, the answer was to build a bigger wing so they can do more surgeries. And it wasn't like, well, what can we do to prevent these people from needing surgery in the first place? And I just thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. You know, you have to start asking better questions. So my first venue outside of traditional chiropractic is I moved into the world of functional neurology. That was my postgraduate work. And so I started to look at everyone from a brain perspective, and it was a big aha moment. Because really, the brain is the organ that controls everything. And as we get into the immune system, we'll talk about that too, because virtually your brain is regulating your immune system response. But as I started to work with looking at everything from a brain perspective, I also realized that the brain was an incredibly energy-demanding organ. And so many of my patients had hormone problems, thyroid problems, blood sugar dysregulation, you know, diabetes, hypoglycemia, gut, you know, dysbiosis. There's so many underlying factors that was affecting metabolism that was virtually affecting their brains. And so then you could not really do proper functional neurology without addressing those issues. So I was forced to go back to school hundreds of hours later, you know, and continuing to studying today, you know, learning more about that and starting to address those issues. So as I work with patients today in a functional perspective, is we look at the whole person from an immune perspective, from a hormone perspective, and from a neurological perspective, the whole person. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
I know our listeners are going to love hearing that. That is definitely the approach most people listening to this podcast take as well. And they love knowing there are doctors out there who see them holistically rather than by very narrow specialties. So, yeah. So I'm excited to learn more about how our bodies work today and the immune system in particular. And I thought we'd start with taking a big picture look. So what are its main functions and how does it keep us alive and healthy?
Sure, that's great. You know, I always like to explain to my patients that, you know, we're made up of a lot of systems, right? We have a cardiovascular system, a pulmonary system, an endocrine system, neurological system, and we also have an immune system. And the sole purpose of the immune system is to protect us. I mean, that's simply what it is. It is our defense system, right? It's to protect us against things that are potentially harmful. And that's what the immune system does, simplistically.
What organs make it up? We'll do just a quick anatomy too, because I think sometimes people don't realize how widespread throughout the body the immune system is.
Yeah, I mean, the immune system is virtually interacting with every system, every organ, literally every cell in your body. But your question as far as organs go, I mean, you know, it begins with the bone marrow. The bone marrow is where the initial immune cells are created. But they're created in an immature state, right? And then they have to become different types of immune cells. And so the instruction for what types of cells they should become take place in different organs. Like, for example, your thymus gland, which sits basically in the middle of your chest, is where your cells become those T cells. The T cells are basically your fighter cells. In your lymphatic system, you know, we have our lymph glands. You know, when people get sick, they feel their lymph nodes kind of swell up a little bit. That's because your immune system is active and it's trying to take care of some foreign entity or toxin in the body, but that's primarily where you're going to be manufacturing antibodies. But, you know, you also think in terms of barrier systems. And I think this is really an important thing to understand in all contexts, but especially with autoimmunity. We think about our skin as a barrier to the outside world, right? And if we were to get a cut, or if your children get a cut on their arm, you're going to clean that and you're going to cover it with a bandage, right? So you don't get an infection coming in. And then you take the bandage off in a week or so, and if it's healing over, you say, good, you can get up and go. But we also have internal barriers, and these are really important. For example, your sinus cavity, your mouth, your oral cavity, your bronchioles, your lungs, your entire digestive environment, even your bladder is lined with what is known as a mucosal barrier. And we have very highly specialized immune cells there. And the role of that is to kind of survey and observe what is coming in from the outside environment. So everything that we eat, everything that we drink, everything, even the air that we breathe that comes in, that mucosal barrier is kind of checking things to see whether it's friendly or it's not. And so really, you can understand that the immune system is really complex. People often find this analogy helpful. I kind of look at the immune system like a football team. And when your football team comes onto the field, you recognize them because they're all wearing the same uniform, right? But under closer observation, you begin to realize that there are different components to that team. There's an offensive team. There's a defensive squad. There's a kickoff team, special teams. And even on the offensive team, there may be a quarterback, and then there's linemen, and then there's a running back and receivers. And on the sidelines, you see coaches. And it might be an offensive coach and a defensive coach, and then there's a head coach. And all of them are in communication with each other and they're sending signals. So the immune system is very much like that. There's a great diversity in the different types of immune cells, but they're all orchestrating together. And the language and the coaching or the cross-talking is a pivotal part of that.
That's a wonderful description. And for listeners, we're going to be talking later in the podcast about what changes with autoimmune disease. But one of the reasons I want to start with just kind of understanding the immune system overall is our body is so amazing. It is frankly magical. And I think when we're healthy, we take it for granted. And then when we're unhealthy, we can get mad at our body and feel betrayed by our body and not really give it credit for everything it's still doing right and everything it has done right over the years. So I want to celebrate the immune system before we start troubleshooting it. Thank you so far.
Yeah.
The next way you often talk about the immune system is there's two parts, the innate and adaptive immune system. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between those two and how do they work together?
Yeah, great question. So the innate immune system, it is what it really sounds like. It's inborn. That is our inherited immune system. When you are birthed into this world, you need some degree of protection. So your innate response is your immediate response. And there is a collection of immune cells. They have different names like macrophages and natural killer cells and so forth. Their job is basically sort of like 24 surveillance. They're just looking for everything and anything that possibly might be foreign to the body, and they need to take care of that. Your adaptive immune system, which is also known as your acquired immune system, is what that sounds like. You acquire it as the years pass. If you wake up one day and you don't feel good, your kids don't feel good, they don't want to go to school, they don't want to get out of bed, your immune system, your innate system is seeing something it hasn't seen before. And so it needs help. And so it turns to the adaptive immune system for that help. And that adaptive immune system now needs to kick into gear and it needs a lot of energy. And so you feel tired. Okay, because the immune system is taking it. And as you produce more of these adaptive immune chemicals like antibodies, at some point, you get the upper hand and your immune system is able to take care of that bacteria or that germ that infected you, and you get over it. And you feel better and you go, ooh, that was a doozy, you know, but now I can get back to work or your kids can get back to school. And your immune system now has a memory of that infected germ. So if you were to get infected with that germ in the future, your innate response now remembers that and has an immediate response to that. So the adaptive immune system also can help us to strengthen our immune system response. That really is the difference.
Cool.
Yeah.
And one of the goals with the podcast is to help everyone get a handle on the vocabulary of the immune system a little bit. Antigens and antibodies are two words that you hear that sound kind of similar, but are very different things. So what are those?
Yeah. antigens are anything that is viewed by the immune system as foreign. And I need to emphasize the word view. So certainly anything that we think about, like, again, I use the germs, bacteria or viruses, even parasites or allergens like pollen that are foreign to the body, that is what an antigen is. The antibody, again, is part of the immune system response, part of that adaptive response. B cells are responsible for making antibodies. So what an antibody is, I think people have heard of these things. They're subclassed into things called IgAs and IgMs and IgGs, IgEs. What that really stands for is I stands for immuno, and the G stands for globulin, which is a protein. So you have an immune protein, and they're divided into subclasses. So you have IgEs, for example, would be an acute reaction. Those are the ones that are increasing in an acute allergy response. For example, I have antibodies against cat dander. So if a cat jumps on my lap, as much as I like cats, probably within a half hour, I would be in the emergency room. That is a IgE reaction. Your IgAs are your early onset immune response to something foreign. So most of that mucosal barrier that I was speaking about, which is your frontline defense, predominates with the IgA antibody. And then you have IgG, which are known more as your systemic. They're more in blood circulation. If you have an infection, and hopefully you have then some long-term immune response to that infection, you have a high titer of IgG antibodies. I hope that answered the question between antigens and antibodies.
Yeah, well, it sounds to me, so antigens are what trigger the immune response and antibodies are part of the immune response. Is that sound accurate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are the antibodies supposed to be doing that's benefiting us? And I ask that because, you know, the reaction, like you mentioned, isn't very fun for the person experiencing it. But again, the immune system's goal is to protect. And so when an antibody is successfully helping us, what's it doing?
I refer to the antibody like a bullseye. The antibody is literally attaching to a protein. It's a signaling molecule, basically. Again, the immune system is working in orchestration. There's not one immune cell that's coming to eradicate something foreign. It's a team effort, just like the football team is a team effort. And so what the antibodies do is they assist the immune system in identifying something as foreign and then recruiting in other helper cells to come in and take care of that foreign antigen. That's what the antibody is doing.
Which leads us perfectly into the next question, where we're going to start talking about the autoimmune response.
Right.
So what changes occur in the immune system that result in an autoimmune response where the body itself has been identified as foreign and is being attacked?
You know, for a long time, and even still presently, I think in the more traditional medical model, right, is they often refer to the autoimmune expression as the immune system is confused. We don't know why the immune system is confused, but the immune system is doing something wrong. In our world in functional medicine, we don't see it like that at all, right? Your immune system is really not doing something wrong. Your immune system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Why would it attack self-tissue? And the answer to that question really is that the self-tissue looks different to the immune system. It no longer looks like normal, healthy tissue. Can I get into a little bit of the Th1, Th2 at this point? Because I think it'll help.
Yeah. For our listeners, I was going to ask that next. But no, absolutely. Whatever way makes the most sense. Yeah.
So there are two major divisions in your adaptive response. And one is known as the Th1, which refers to T helper or T helper 1 division. And the other one is called the Th2 division. The Th1 division is going to be made up of things known as killer cells and cytotoxic cells. So their job is to go in and help and kill things that are bad. The Th2 part of the immune system doesn't really kill anything. But what they do is they drive in an inflammatory response and is that part of the immune system that is creating and making antibodies. In the case of autoimmunity, using thyroid as an example, right, it would target and position an antibody against the thyroid gland. Now, when that happens, the Th1 system is notified of that. It sees that antibody there against the thyroid tissue. Now, the Th1 system is not going to turn to the Th2 system and say to the Th2 system, hey, hold on a second, did you make a mistake? let's sit down, let's talk about this. No, it doesn't do that. It just sees that tissue is foreign. Now, that being said, the Th1 system may not kick into gear right away. It may not create an attack on that fibroid tissue, even though the antibody is there. It can sit there quietly for a really long time. But somewhere along the journey, years later perhaps, there may be a triggering event that turns on or upregulates this Th1 response, and then it can start to more aggressively then start going after that fibroid tissue because it sees the antibody there. That's why there are basically different stages of autoimmunity. The first stage is known as silent autoimmunity. Silent autoimmunity refers to where you have antibodies that have been produced and they have attached to self tissue. There isn't any tissue in your body that does not have the potentiality to be up for an autoimmune response. Very commonly is thyroid because it's such an active organ. But you can have an antibody against the self tissue, and again, it can be sitting there for years quietly where there's no attack and you have no symptoms. Right? And that's known as the silent stage. I see that in my practice all the time. Right? Then you can progress into the active stage. The active stage is when now the immune system is upregulated and you are actually getting an immunological response against self tissue. Right? And then it can progress into the third stage, which is the destructive stage. Right? And that's where you see aggressive tissue destruction, which is not a good place to be. So I think, you know, the question is always going to be, well, then why is the immune system putting antibodies against self-tissue? Right? And the answer to that always is that it's seeing things there that shouldn't be there, right? And so we are living in an extremely toxic environment. There's no doubt about that. Every generation is more toxic than the one before that. So our bodies are exposed to so many chemicals, right? Herbicides and pesticides and fungicides and glyphosates that are in our food sources and our water sources. We're exposed to heavy metals. We're exposed to the toxins in the air that we breathe in, the carbon monoxides. We set the stage for so many potential bacterial infections and viral infections. But all of these foreign entities, if they are permitted to pass through that barrier system that I was talking about, and they wind up in circulation, what we call the systemic circulation, now you are moving these chemical entities at high dosages through the body, right? And they have the ability to bind onto self tissue. So once a chemical, for example, mercury or heavy metal, if it binds onto the thyroid gland, to the tissue of the thyroid gland, literally the protein that makes up your thyroid gland no longer looks like normal healthy tissue because it's got a foreign entity attached to it. And that's why your immune system will target it. So your immune system isn't doing anything incorrect. Your tissue literally looks different. And that is really the fundamentals of autoimmunity 101.
It's kind of wild and hard to wrap the mind around it sometimes, but how different modern life is from the way our bodies were originally created. And it's how amazing our bodies have been to be flexible and adapt and keep up with those changes and detoxify and keep us healthy in spite of, like you said, the assault, really.
Yeah.
I think it's something like 50,000 chemicals have been released into the environment in the last 100 years that haven't really been tested for their effect on the human body. And that if you do take blood and screen it for various chemicals and plastics, you usually find both, I think. Our body does its best a job as it can do to get a lot of it out again, but it doesn't clear it completely. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt you're 100% correct. You know, the body is, it is incredible. I mean, it is incredible to think about the depth of exposure we have to so many foreign things, and yet it is still so capable of adapting. And that's the one thing that we should understand is that the body has an incredible ability to adapt. But we need to do our part, right? We need to do our part to assist that. And focusing on detoxification is important. Now, I'm not just talking about like running down to the local health food store and taking some detox product. I'm talking about fundamental things, right? Is how does the body detox? Number one is we have to move our bowels. And I can't tell you how many people I see, but that's a huge problem. And if you're not moving your bowels at least once a day, there is an elimination problem. So how are you going to get those toxins out? Right? So we want to do the best that we can to limit the external toxins. And so if we make better choices with our foods, you know, organic versus chemically driven foods, nutritious foods filled with, you know, vital nutrients, living foods, that gives our bodies, you know, the nutrients it needs to be strong and have good energy versus chemically treated foods or processed foods, which adds no value at all and just stresses the system. All these things are factors. So there really is a comprehensive lifestyle approach that we can all participate in. You know, I mean, genetically, we all have variations. Some people genetically can detoxify better than other people. But I always kind of kid with our patients and say, you know, there are some of those people out there that they walk around, they drink a pint of whiskey every night and they smoke a carton of cigarettes and they live to 100. You know, I mean, they're out there, but that's not the norm, right? That's not the norm. You know, and then you have other people, they can walk into a department store and they take a whiff of perfume and they're knocked over and they can't recover for 2 weeks. So you have, you know, the extremes. But I think, you know, again, you're correct that the body has just an incredible capacity to adapt. And we need to nurture that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing about our listeners is I have a very empowered audience who really believes in doing what they can to maximize their autoimmune health. And this explains one of the ways that that helps. And it brings up the word epigenetics to me. So We often talk about how our genes are one thing, but really epigenetics are the factors that turn those genes on and off again. Mm-hmm. And you've given a good description of how autoimmunity often gets turned on by exterior forces, and the things we do to take care of ourselves help calm that response down again. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later in the podcast. So this is a good time to mention show notes. My regular listeners know I always keep very detailed show notes on the blog. I take notes so you don't have to, and there's a lot of information contained in this podcast, and I summarize it for you, and you can find that on my website. And for those of you who want to learn more about detoxification, I did a podcast dedicated to that topic completely, and that is episode 56. Dr. Pucci, one thing I would like to do is circle back to the conversation we had earlier on the spectrum of autoimmunity. And one thing that occurs to me is when you mentioned the silent, where antibodies can be present, but there is no attack happening. There are no symptoms. That's one thing that I think can be helpful for people to remember later in their healing journey, especially I was thinking in terms of lots of different diagnoses. But when you mentioned thyroid, people can get kind of obsessed with their number of antibodies. And even if they feel great and aren't having any symptoms at all, they wish those antibodies could drop down to zero. That doesn't always happen, but that's not always a bad thing. They usually do reduce in number, but it doesn't mean they'll go away completely. Is that what you're saying? It can go silent again.
Yeah, it's a very good point that you're bringing up here. And I see this all the time in practice. The antibody count is not a determinant of how serious the autoimmune expression is. People get fixated on the antibody counts. And I even think that doctors who aren't really well-versed in this get confused with this also. If your antibody count is flagged, elevated over the lab count, even if it's a few points, it's autoimmune, right? If you're coming in with counts in the thousands, it does not mean that your autoimmune is more aggressive than somebody's count is just a few points above that. If you're working and you're doing things to control your autoimmunity and you're getting the antibody count to drop, that's a good sign that you're kind of controlling the antibody count. What you don't want to see, for example, is like if you're doing things with me and you're working with me and I see your antibody count is holding strong and it's only like 200 points above the lab value and that's been consistently good, then all of a sudden one day your antibody count is like 1200, it's going to be a flag. It's okay. It's a flag saying like what just happened is something turning it on, right? But just because your antibody count comes down doesn't mean that you're actually turning it off or turning it back on. Is that helpful?
Yes. Yes. Because it's really... it's the killer cells we want to control.
What you're doing with autoimmunity, right, and this is, again, what I try to really explain to patients, is that there is no curing of autoimmunity. Right? There's no such thing. Anybody who tells you that doesn't really understand autoimmunity because your immune system has a memory of it, which it never loses. Right? What you do with autoimmunity is you put it into remission. You actively control it. You calm down the inflammatory immune response. You regulate your immune system response. So you limit the more destruction. But it's an empowering act. You have control of this. Is not going to be something that has to wreck your life, right? You just have to be informed and you have to take action and you need some help along the road.
So I have one last question for you about the immune system. And then for our listeners who are feeling a little bogged down by the science, right after that, we're going to be getting into how the things that we do impact immune health, how that actually works. So why do things like food sensitivities drive up autoimmune activity? And how do things like quality sleep calm that activity down again? But before we do that, Dr. Pucci, you mentioned how important it is to regulate the immune system, and that's a key to remission. And I know there are some other cells in the immune system we haven't talked about yet that are really key to that process. And I was wondering if you'd tell us just a little bit more about that, and then we'll talk diet and lifestyle.
Sure. So you have not just the TH1 and TH2 system, but you also have specialized immune cells called regulating immune cells. And the job and the responsibility of those regulating immune cells is to communicate with the TH1 system and the TH2 system and keep them imbalanced. Turn on the TH1 when we need to, and then turn it off, and turn on the TH2, and then turn it off, right? So it's going to help to kind of control an immune system kind of running amok, right? So again, the TH2 system is the system that is really the driver of inflammation. And so it's appropriate for a little while, but we don't want it to get where it gets stuck. And so when you talk about lifestyle things, right, there are so many things in our lifestyle, from sleep deprivation to stress to poor dietary habits, infections in our body, so many things that have a propensity to push our immune systems into a TH2 dominance. Now, what happens is the TH2 system is producing itself a lot of chemicals. Okay, an example might be from the TH2 system, a person also develops mast cells activation. So mast cells will release chemicals that gives you that histamine response, that sort of allergy response. So we know that if a person is having more of those kind of reactions, they're TH2 dominant. But the other subset from the TH2 system is they produce chemicals that drives what is known as TH17. TH17 produces chemicals that is going to then create an upregulation of an aggressive attack against self tissue. And then you're left with what is called feedback mechanisms in this loop, because as the TH1 system becomes more dominant and it produces chemicals called cytokines that stimulates the TH17, the TH17 is producing cytokines that are pro-inflammatory that tells the TH2 system to make more TH17. And that's why things get stuck in loops. And that's why people can get frustrated when they say, okay, you know, I'm doing all these good things. I'm trying all these things and nothing seems to be working. And it's because their immune system is stuck in feedback loops, right? And so knowing that is you still got to do the right things, but you have to kind of come in and start trying to use nutraceuticals to try to start down-regulating these feedback loops. I hope that wasn't too expansive an explanation, but...
No, I think it was helpful. So it starts with the chronic inflammation that kicks off the TH17, which kicks off more of the attack happening in TH1, which continues to kick everything off. It's just one thing kicks off another thing, kicks off another thing.
Kicks off another one, yeah. What's really pivotal in autoimmunity are those regulating immune cells, right? Making sure that we have a healthy regulatory response. This is where your vitamin D comes in. You know, people often ask about what's the role of vitamin D. Well, it's really a pro-hormone. But one of its major influences is it impacts these regulating cells. So your vitamin D levels literally have an influence over the regulation of your immune system response. And that's what you want. And so you don't want to have low vitamin D counts. You want to have a robust vitamin D count. We always encourage our patients to have their vitamin D levels somewhere around 60 to 80 or so.
So this is a good time to talk about supplements, and I know our listeners will be interested if there are any other supplements besides vitamin D that you recommend for your patients with autoimmune disease.
Yeah, that's a good question, Eileen. I think, you know, what I always try to encourage my patients, what I inform people about is when it comes to nutritional supplementation, specifically with autoimmunity, is typically less is better. All too often people are trying to find, you know, the one magic supplement that's going to make them feel better, rock the world. You know, it really isn't that. So many people that I see come in with shopping bags of supplements. It's just not the right thing to be doing. I always like to explain to people that we macro manage before you micromanage. You know, so macro managing means addressing all of those lifestyle issues. Diets, again, sleep, exercise, spirituality, relationships, you know, meditation, all those things that we need to be doing. Your gut health, obviously, we didn't get to talk much about that. But, you know, rather than just trying to turn to one supplement, much more useful tool would be to put attention to the gut environment, your microbiome. Right? Your gut environment is 70% of your immune system. So the imbalance of that gut microbiome is critical, right? And much of that microbiome exists or doesn't exist based upon your dietary habits, not upon supplementation. The bacteria that exist in your gut are literally colonizing based upon the foods that you eat. That's how they live and survive and colonize. If you're eating a diet that's high in processed foods and high in sugars, then all the beneficial bacteria can't feed on that and they're going to disappear. And then what are you left with? You're just left with an overgrowth of more pathogenic and more problematic bacteria, creating more of an inflammatory response. And any supplement is not going to change that.
Yeah. I have an article on my website about how to find a good functional medicine practitioner. And that's one of the things that I say right away is the foundation they should be working on is diet and lifestyle before they start troubleshooting other things. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So I know our listeners are going to want to know how all of these different interventions that they either are doing or want to get the motivation to do will help balance our immune system in a healthy direction. And let's go ahead and start by talking about food. It's one of the major ways we can support our health. And there's two things I'm thinking of. One is a lot of people listening to this podcast have discovered food intolerances through the paleo autoimmune protocol, through the elimination and reintroduction process. And part of how they personalize their diet is to remove those inflammatory foods. And then long-term, ideally, a lot of the things you're talking about, rebuilding gut health helps expand their tolerance again too. Mm-hmm. But I imagine they're curious, like why, if they have intolerance, for example, nightshades, very common in this community, how that ramps up the immune response, like why does that become a problem?
Yeah, gosh. Well, you know, if you go back to the beginning of our conversation when you asked me about antigens versus antibodies, and I explained that, you know, an antigen is something that is considered or viewed by the immune system as foreign. You know, when we eat food, it's coming into our environment, right? And so when we talk about intolerances, what you're really saying is that your immune system is seeing that particular food as something foreign. Right? And you're kind of scratching your head and you say, well, why would that be? Right? Again, so if you talked about the barrier systems, again, the mucosal layer, and your audience must be familiar with the term leaky gut, right? So leaky gut is where your mucosal barrier is breaking down. So again, you go back to lifestyle stuff, which contributes to the leaky gut, and the leaky gut then allows things to come through. So when we eat our foods and we digest our foods, the proteins of foods need to be broken down in our digestive system into what's called amino acids. And if our digestive system isn't doing a good job of that, we're left with what are called peptides, sort of undigested proteins. Well, that's okay if we have an intact barrier, but if the barrier is breaking, if there's a leaky gut simultaneously, then those peptides can slip through the barrier and enter into your systemic circulation and then moving around the body. And they're not supposed to be there. So again, your immune system doing what it's supposed to do, your immune system now all of a sudden sees these food proteins floating through your body. And it says, what the heck is that? And so what does it do? It creates an antibody and it tags it. So now it creates an immune response against that food protein. So what does that mean for you? Every time you eat that food, your immune system has a memory. And so it creates an inflammatory response. So that food now triggers an inflammatory response, right? So now if we have antibodies that are also positioned against self tissue in the body, like your thyroid or your joints or whatever, the food that you're eating, even though it's a good food, your immune system doesn't see it that way any longer. And now the food becomes a trigger, turns on the inflammation, and that immune inflammatory response can course react with the self tissue like your thyroid. So the common thing you hear about is gluten. Gluten is a protein. It's a protein that's found in wheat and rye and barley. Maybe, of course, reacts with oats, right? And so for so many people, the immune system sees it as foreign. So the ingestion of the gluten ignites or turns on aggressively the immune system. But once the immune system is turned on, right, it's going to kind of look around and it's looking for other things and it sees the antibodies against other tissues like your thyroid and it starts going after that. So now the ingestion of the gluten literally causes more immune destruction against thyroid. You know, and that's the food game. Right? And what happens with so many people with autoimmunity, unfortunately, is because of the chronicity of issues and stress, is that they continue to develop more and more and more food reactions or immune responses to foods. We try to start people off with the least restrictive diet and see how they do. And if it's just not good enough, then you got to move them from paleo to autoimmune paleo, right? And you got to start taking out categories of foods. And when people get off gluten, what do they tend to do, Eileen, right? They just go up and down the gluten-free aisle in the supermarket buying gluten-free substitutes. So they eat other versions, they eat, you know, other kinds of grains. But the immune system can be equally reactive to those other food categories too. So the food game does become complex and can be discouraging for people. But typically when people begin to identify these foods and can eliminate them from their diet for an extended period of time and do the right things to get the immune system back into balance, very often they can at some point start to reintroduce these foods and not have those inflammatory immune system responses. So that is the navigation game.
And for our listeners who want to learn more, I have two podcasts from my archives to recommend to you. Episode 32 is all about leaky gut, and episode 147 is about loss of oral tolerance and how to restore that again. So that's how food intolerances can ramp up the immune response. There's also the opposite benefit of certain foods and nutrients that help support a healthy immune system, encourage immune system balance, and basically feed our bodies for health. And I'm curious if there are any foods or nutrients that you find really essential for your patients when it comes to immune system health?
Food specifically or nutrients specifically, you're going with that.
On this podcast, we talk a lot about nutrient density. So it's not necessarily that I expect you to say, here's the magic food that you all need to eat. It will put you in.
That's my point.
I don't mean that at all. But I guess how positive nutrition supports immune health in the same way that food intolerances maybe are a negative factor.
I tell people that, you know, food is not neutral. Everything that you put into your environment, that's going into your mouth, is going into your gut, and 70% of your immune system is in your gut. So what you put in there, you should be paying attention to. And food is not neutral. It's either going to be nutritious and helpful, or it's going to be inflammatory and not, to varying degrees. There really is no neutrality. So if you're focusing just on living foods, you got the upper hand. Anything that comes that is packaged, for the most part, you have to give some consideration to. Right? You know, the first thing you should do is to start reading the nutritional profile. The things I always look for is how much sugar is in there. Sugar is very inflammatory. And the other nutrient that you want to pay attention to from immune modulation, from an inflammatory response, is sodium. Sodium is so inflammatory. But if you're turning towards real food, your vegetables and your fruits as the predominance of your diet, right, with healthy fats and lean proteins. You know, if you eat animal proteins, pasture-raised poultry, right, you don't want grain-fed beef, it would be grass-fed beef. That's really where your focus is from a dietary standpoint. Yeah, the 80-20 rule is always a good rule to go by, but a lot of times when we see people and they come in and they're so flared up, you know, they can't do an 80-20 rule. It's almost got to be a 100% rule for a while, until things kind of calm down, and then they can kind of have a little more flexibility there. But, you know, don't overthink it. It's just real food. You're always going to have the upper hand in real food.
Absolutely. Okay, what about sleep? So many of our listeners will tell you that lack of sleep is one of their biggest flare triggers. Mm-hmm. So how does sleep interact with the immune system?
Oh, gosh, that is a big one. That is so many people. Your immune system is dependent upon recuperative sleep. The research is clear. Like, your immune system is controlled by your nervous system, by your brain, right? So you can't separate that. And it's automatic. And there's two sides to this automatic nervous system called the sympathetic and a parasympathetic. Your sympathetic is your fight-flight response. It's survival. And your parasympathetic is for nurturing and for growth. And when we sleep at night, we should be parasympathetic dominant so our bodies can heal and recover and recoup, right? Your brain detoxifies at night, right? So sleep is imperative for healthy immune system response and for regulation of that immune system. And I know your audience is saying, good, I hear that, but how do I get it? I can't get it. You know, there's a lot of different approaches to take. If you're doing all the other things too, though, right, Eileen, if you're really paying attention to your diet and removing inflammatory triggers, that itself is going to help. If you think about what you're eating at night, making sure your blood sugar levels are not elevated at night, that is a critical component. The number one cause for insomnia is blood sugar dysregulation. Blood sugar is critical for life. Your brain feeds on blood sugar. So blood sugar is fuel for your cells. If you're not getting glucose, which is blood sugar, inside your cells, your body starts freaking out and the stress alarms go off. So if your blood sugar is dropping during the night, your stress hormones are going to go off, your cortisol goes up, and you're in a fight or flight response and you're going to wake up. And your immune system is put on guard because you're in a stress response. So blood sugar management is critical. That's the number one thing a person can start to pay attention to try to help with sleep. You know, another strategy that we always tell people to do with sleep is to turn off all those electrical devices, you know, a couple hours before you go to bed. It's hard for people, but all those blue lights that are coming out, all those electromagnetic frequencies are very disturbing. So you want to have a calm environment. Your bedroom should not have any electrical devices in them because they are still pulling Wi-Fi in there, which is disturbing to EMFs. So I encourage everybody to get all kinds of electrical devices out of their bedroom. And the other thing I always tell people to do is, no matter what time you go to bed, is wake up the same time. If you force yourself to wake up the same time, right, eventually your circadian rhythms will start falling back into sync, no matter what time you go to bed. Over a period of time, you instinctively will start going to bed a little bit earlier. There's a lot of other strategies we can do for meditation and deep breathing exercise. You can get to all this kind of stuff, but those are the big players. Get the EMFs out of your room and get a better handle on blood sugar. That is so critical for sleep.
Yeah, those are great. And for our listeners, I did an episode all about blood sugar regulation. It's episode 131, if you want to listen to that. And I did an episode on troubleshooting sleep, which is 94. So if you're struggling with sleep, definitely check both of those out. And Dr. Pucci, my last question for you actually is about stress and stress management. So you've mentioned already that the brain is in charge of the immune system and that the parasympathetic response is really where I think our immune system and our brain get their chance to clear and calm and rejuvenate. So So is that why stress is such a big flare trigger and stress management so essential to immune balance?
Yeah, you know, stress itself, we hear that term a lot, we think about it. All stress is not so bad, right? I mean, stress has a role in our lives. I mean, gravity creates stress, but yet it keeps our bones dense and our muscles strong. Some people can function under deadlines and become very, very creative. But I mean, the very essence of stress goes back to survival. I take my dogs hiking out in the woods, and we walk down the river, and every once in a while, I'll see like a flock of geese, and it'll be maybe two or three geese that kind of get into a little fluster. The feathers are flying and stuff, and it lasts about 30 seconds, not even that. And then they turn around, they all start swimming together back downstream, like it's over. But see, human beings, we don't have that. Human beings, we hold on to stress. And there's so many things that's coming at us 24/7, and our systems, our nervous system is just not designed for this. And so it goes into a defense posture. And that defense posture is what we refer to as a sympathetic response. It's a survival response. But if your immune system is under a constant barrage with stress, it's going to become deplete. Okay, and it's shifting us into that pro-inflammatory state. Everything that we can do to try to modulate stress is helpful. Right? And that's very cumbersome for a lot of people. But I think what we need to do is we make time in our day to prioritize ourselves. Right, to have self-love, to have self-forgiveness, to allow time for ourselves to just slow down and to breathe a little bit. You know, breathing is overlooked, right? But your breathing rhythm sets the tone for your brain. So if we just take the time, slow down and do deep breathing, is we are going to slow down the electrical circuitry in our brain and position our brain to be more into a parasympathetic tone, right? And we're in more of a parasympathetic tone, we're going to enhance and bolster and, more importantly, regulate that immune system response.
It's amazing what a difference, you know, a 5-minute break can make if someone makes it consciously, if they don't just grab their phone and scroll Instagram for those 5 minutes, but if they take 5 minutes to take a few deep breaths, you know, look at nature or close your eyes or take some silence or listen to some soothing music. I can feel my body change completely. I can feel my heart rate slow down if I'm having a stressful day. And I take 5 minutes to breathe, my whole body feels different after I've done that.
Yeah, and it's also being present, isn't it? Even though we reward people for multitasking, the brain is not designed to do that. So once your mind is doing multiple things, it's in a stress response.
Yeah. So anytime we choose to just do one thing at a time, it does feel more relaxing to the body. It's so true. And it's helpful for people to know it's not about being relaxed 24/7 and setting a perfectionist goal.
No.
But taking those breaks and those moments and just having more of those in our day makes a dramatic difference.
It is. You know, like anything else, you set times for things. You know, some people might prioritize going to the gym, and they just put it into their calendar. No matter what comes up, they're going to go to a gym at a certain time, right? Or they're going to stop for a few minutes at a certain time and just do some deep breathing, you know, or they're going to only allow a certain amount of times on their cell phone for certain days. Or as we said earlier, maybe you're just going to put the cell phone down an hour before you go to bed. You just kind of set those parameters for yourself. Yeah, you know, again, you go back to that gut environment and the gut, the digestive environment being your immune system and the role it plays on the microbiome, which has an influence over the expression of autoimmunity. When you're in a sympathetic tone, fight or flight tone, all the blood is going to be pulled out of your gut and it's shunted to your muscles, right? So that you can run and fight whatever this the threat is. And so if we're in a constant or, you know, an abundance of this sympathetic tone, you can't nurture your gut, right? And there's no supplement to work your way out of that.
So for our listeners, I'm going to include some links in the show notes. I have an article on my website called 5 Quick Stress Relievers. I also have a tutorial on a couple of different deep breathing techniques. And if you want to listen to a podcast, episode 24 is all about the mind-body connection, and it goes into the science of psychoneuroimmunology, which is how the brain and stress and the immune system all interact with each other. So again, that's episode 24. So we have come to the end of our time together. Dr. Pucci, do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
Yeah. I think that, you know, for your audiences, even when you're having an autoimmune flare, is don't look at it or consider it to be that your immune system is failing you. It's not doing that. It's not failing you, right? You use it as a tool. It's communicating to you. It's telling you something, and it's your job to take a step back and listen. You know, be aware of these things and say, okay, where can I make some adjustments in my lifestyle, in my diet, and other things that can kind of redirect me and kind of put my ship back on course a little bit. That's all it is. And I think we need to be respectful of that, right? You're like you say, your body's an incredible machine. It's very resilient and adaptive, and we just need to listen to it when it's speaking to us.
That's a beautiful note to end on. So Dr. Pucci, thank you so much for taking time to educate us about our bodies today. You have a website, I know. You have, I think, an ebook available for people. And then I imagine some people will be curious whether or not you are accepting new patients. And if so, how they can find out about all of those things.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, we are accepting new patients. That's my responsibility, is to help as many people as I can. Yeah, we have a great video mini-series all about functional medicine. It goes into a little bit more detail, a lot more strategies for people to start to try to learn and employ a little bit. But if you go to my website, which is getwell-now, that's getwell-now.com/video series. It'll take you right to this little mini course where there's a lot of good information. It's free. And there's also, if you're interested, we also offer a free 20-minute discovery call. So anyone who wants to take it to the next step and maybe consider, you know, working with me or get some advice, we set aside 20 minutes at no cost just to see if we can dig a little deeper and maybe give you some guidance and also see if you're the right fit for what we do in our office.
Wonderful. And I will include links in the show notes to your website and to that video series. And I thank you so much. I hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed this, Eileen, talking to you, and look forward to speaking with you in the future.
So that's our show for today. Visit phoenixhelix.com for show notes. I'll be posting a summary of what we discussed here today, along with links to more information. That's phoenixhelix.com. I've also written 4 books, The Simple Guide to the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol, 85 Amazing AIP Breakfasts, The Paleo AIP Instant Pot Cookbook, and Reintroducing Foods on the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol. You can find those through the books menu on my website or just scroll down my homepage. Also, if you liked today's podcast episode, please leave a positive review on iTunes. I know that takes some extra effort on your part, but it really helps new listeners find the show. And also be sure to subscribe to the podcast yourself so you never miss an episode. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another great show. But before we go, I'd like to say a special thank you to my husband, Tom, who played the beautiful guitar you heard at the start of this episode and is now going to sing us home.
The show is over. I'll be on my way.